If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
Hey, everybody. This is Seth Meyers on the Late Night Podcast, and I'm here with Amy Poehler.
Hi, Seth.
Hi. I'm going to talk about your movie, but you had an incredible premiere party last night.
Yeah.
And you were just saying that you were up late.
Very late. And I love to sleep now, and I love bedtime.
How early would you go to bed, ideally?
9:30.
Yeah. I think we're about the same.
Yep. I'm now, L.A., 10 o'clock is a prime time. Like, that's... When it gets to 10:30, I start getting nervous.
Yeah.
And do you remember not that long ago, we would meet, you and I,
yep,
and many others, would, yep, meet to go out at like 11:30 p.m.
On a Thursday night in New York City. That was our tradition.
We would say, like, let's meet at your place first so we don't get there too early.
And that would be 11:30 at night. These were work weeks.
That's right.
We would then have to go to work on Friday for Saturday Night Live, but that was how young, the kind of young gunners we were back then.
Oh, man, those were the days, the vampire days.
The vampire days. The highlight, which I'll never forget, is being in a nightclub at around 4:30 in the morning.
Ugh.
You, Keenan, and Finesse Mitchell.
That's right.
And you guys had a 6 a.m. call for commercial parody.
I'm thinking about this.
Where you guys had to play the Black Eyed Peas.
That's right. And we had to... stand in the middle of the New Jersey Turnpike, I think, and and lip sync to "Let's Get It Started" with John Heder,
yep,
who was the host, who was playing the other member of the Black Eyed Peas.
Yep.
And I had to get there a little earlier because I had to do a head to toe spray tan.
Fergie spray tan.
Yep. And we didn't go to sleep that night.
Yeah.
And Keenan Thompson did a really funny bit where he kept pretending to take calls from himself, saying "Go to bed." And he was like, "Who is this?" He kept pretending. But yeah, we were at the club. We were at the club.
Yeah.
And then I felt like, oh no, I'm in trouble. And then they walked in. We were like, "Hey," as if that was going to make it better.
Yeah, and it's still. Mm-mm. I wouldn't say it's probably a hard sketch to find because of music clearance, but.
Yeah.
The funniest thing when I go back and watch it is because you described it to me that you guys would like go to sleep on the pavement.
Yeah, we all would crash for 5 minutes between,
yes,
rolling and cut.
And then you would have to, and again, a band known for its enthusiastic performance style, that you had to so hungover and tired do Black Eyed Peas.
Yeah, I mean, everybody has these kind of days, but I had that day where I started crying. I was like, I'm not going to be able to, because I had a full SNL day ahead of me,
yeah,
after that. I think it was a Friday, so we were doing updates. So it was like, I knew I was staring down maybe a 14-hour day.
Yeah, and that's how it started.
And let's get it started. It's what we sang.
And so, yeah. So then last night, though, you just showed, yeah, me a video of you and your cast.
Yeah.
Who are all your dear friends. I don't know if I've ever been in a screening that has so many parents. It was really lovely last night.
It was really lovely. And we were all kind of talking about that, about how a lot of our parents were there. And, you know, we're getting up there in age,
yeah,
and so are they.
Yeah.
So it was pretty cool that they
did most
come.
Of them burn the midnight oil with you guys as well?
Well, my dad... managed to let everybody know that he was my father. That was great right away. And then he, I'm going to be directing another movie, and he asked me, would that party be as fun as this one? Those were some fun things.
So he's already raising the stakes mm-hmm. and expectations.
He's already can't even be in the moment that he's in. He has to be asking me how fun the other party's going to be. And then he harassed Steve Buscemi.
Okay.
Yeah. And they took 100 pictures of Ham, John Ham.
Oh, yeah.
Who they've met.
Yep.
You know, over the years, he's a friend of ours. And they just stood and took pictures of him like he was a painting.
You know, I will say, if you're going back to Massachusetts and you want to show your friends that you had a fun time at a party, Ham is kind of the gold standard.
Yeah.
To have a photo with John Ham. He was looking very handsome last night.
Always.
Looking very New York City.
Yeah. What is it, what is New York? What's that mean? Looking New York City, Seth.
A well tailored outfit.
Yeah,
that's what I felt like John had on last night, and a proper drink.
I see. Yeah. Interesting. I wish I could have a whiskey or something, but I think it tastes like medicine.
I will say I because of watching, having come straight from the screening, I really just craved a big old glass of red wine last night.
Yeah, there's a lot of wine pouring in this movie.
There's a lot.
What whiskey do you drink now? Because you're a whiskey guy, right?
I am kind of sort of all over the place. I started drinking old fashions just because they're sugary and sweet. And I feel like.
Really?
I just think I need the sugar to stay awake.
And
I'm
you're
so
very
tired.
Skinny. Yeah. But are you running all the time?
No, my feet hurt now all the time.
What are you doing then?
I don't know. I think just, you know, chasing kids around maybe.
Yeah,
and like forgetting meals.
No, I don't know what you're talking about. Forgetting meals. Nope. I don't relate to this.
Emily Spivey, who is, and everyone in this show, you guys all work together at SNL.
Yeah.
That's where you all met. Emily Spivey is in the movie.
Yeah.
And she was a writer on SNL.
Yeah, and she started with, when we started, same day.
2001. And
great year for comedy.
Great year for comedy. August, you want to start, August 2001.
Just before they say comedy is dead.
But you, did you have to convince Spivey to be in it? Because she's so good.
Yes. Emily is our friend and a hilarious performer as well as a hilarious writer, but she does not drink her tea too hot, as my Trinidadian friend would say. And so she takes a minute and she wrote the part for herself and then tried to get out of it.
Yeah.
So a couple weeks before the movie, she said, like, I don't think I should play this. And I, because I know her so well, I just waited her out. I just said, oh, okay, that's interesting. Yeah, we should talk about it next week. And then I just waited. I just pulled like a Lorne and I just said, like, yes, let's talk on Friday. And then you got to go, the show's on. Like, I just, and so I just waited her out until the movie started, but she tried to back out of it.
It would have been jarring because it would have been, if there was one outlier cast member, it would have been very strange. If it was five people who've known each other forever.
Funny game to think about who we would have replaced.
Yeah, who would?
It was all of us, and then like,
Who would it?
Who would it be? It would probably be like
Sarah Paulson.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who would have been great?
Better than great, she would have nailed it.
Yeah, but it
she's
was
a
nice.
Pro.
It was nice to have the genetic consistency of all these people that came up at SNL.
Yeah.
It strikes me that you had this because again, you directed this film. I don't know if I've said that yet.
You haven't, so you thanks for.
And this is your directorial debut.
That's right.
What did it? In the end, was it what you thought it would be?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to doing more where I'm not acting so much. It's not that fun. It's really fun to be behind the camera at the monitors directing. And then when I would have to go act, I'd be like, ugh. Like, yes. I hated that part.
Also, that means that on a day where you're directing, you also have to add an hour or two to just get camera ready.
Yeah. And I mean, I have full prosthetics in everything I do. Even if it's not visible, I'll have under the pants or under the blouse.
You always wear a self wig.
Oh, it's funny. When I was doing this movie, I was like, not one person can wear a wig. Because I think at one point, maybe Tina was thinking maybe my character should wear a wig. And I was like adamant, like, we cannot wear. The minute one of us wears a wig, we're in SNL time. But I did. Yes, I had a full self wig as a director. I had my directing wig.
So you were saying you want to direct something that you're not in. Also, I imagine it's both the best thing in the world to direct your friends, but also they treat you like a friend the whole time.
Yeah, and you know, from SNL, we're all used to like directing our own stuff. So, and we're used to, here at SNL, the writer is king. So you go to the writer with changes. And on features, it's different. You know, you're usually the writer isn't oftentimes even on set, but because we love Kukowski so much,
yeah,
and because Spivey was in the movie, the writers were on set. So what would happen is, like, Dratch would want to change. So I'd say, I think here you want to make sure that she's still pretty angry. And she'd go, okay. And then I would hear, like, a little pitter-patter of feet, and she would just go over to Liz and go, I don't want to be angry. And I would go, what are you talking about? I go, what are you two talking about? And Dratch would go, no, I'm just nothing. Everything's fine. And then she'd walk away, and Liz would go, she doesn't want to be angry. And I'd go, Rachel, you could just tell me. She'd go, no, I'll just tell Liz. Like, so there was a lot of some indirect communication because we'd known each other for so long. But yeah, and it was just a lot of getting them to stop. It was like, stop being funny,
right,
so we can get started.
And then did you have to tell them to stop being funny within scenes as well? Because
yes,
we were talking a little last night. There really, I think there's this really nice balance of what struck me as really wonderfully scripted stuff and also stuff that seemed as though you as a director found it on the day with them. But are you ever behind camera thinking this is so funny and also completely unusable?
No,
oh,
I don't think
good.
I did. I don't think I thought anything was completely unusable. There were maybe a couple. No, we didn't. We improvised, but we didn't do the thing that there has been a trend of which I think we've participated in, encouraged, and then maybe felt the sting of, which is like just tons and tons and tons of improv. And
yeah,
just like standing there forever and shooting and shooting and shooting and then having all these options. And I got a little weary of that in the process of it. And so I didn't want to do that. So we would do some takes that were improvised and stuff, but we didn't like just say we're just going to stand here until we, you know.
And I'm sure you were based. You also probably didn't have a ton of days and time to.
Yeah, we didn't have done. And every single woman in that movie was working on like has their own network.
Yeah.
Like, they have, I mean, people are like, what's the hardest part of the movie? I was like, just getting everyone's schedule, like getting Tina to be able to do it for as the short amount of time we could get her, and getting Maya to commit between her five shows, and Paula was writing and Emily was working on a show. And so everybody was super busy.
Anna was here earlier this week. I don't think we talked about it, but I didn't realize. So you guys are in a text chain.
Yeah.
What is your text chain called? Is it?
It's called Tang. I'm not sure
Tang.
Why. I think
okay,
it's
good.
Short for.
Okay.
I don't know who named it.
Okay.
Sounds like a Paula thing.
Yes. But she was saying that kind of started not right after you guys all left the show. It was a little bit later, maybe after
yeah.
the Betty White episode.
Oh, is that it?
That's what she was saying.
I know.
Yeah.
Anna is a little bit of the historian.
That's a nice person to have in a group.
Yeah, she's the one that remembers things. Also, she has the most SNL memory, I think, her and Spivey. Yeah, because Anna was only here for 1 year, was only at SNL for 1 year.
Yes.
I keep saying here because we're in
30 Rock. Yes,
but your show is also here, which
yeah.
is its own independent thing that's really taking off.
Thank you.
You're so welcome. I think it's a hit.
Yeah. You know, these are the weird days, though. I should note, today's a Thursday.
Yeah, so what's that
And there's
like?
An SNL. There's one day a week where SNL and us
mm-hmm.
are doing a show on the same day. And that's the only day that's kind of ghosty for me.
Oh, because you see you can hear.
Even if it's just sort of like down the hallway.
Mm-hmm. So interesting.
Yeah, because more often than not, I completely forget that I'm in the same building.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, you did like trauma therapy where you know, if you like were in a plane crash and you just keep going back to the same plane, but you just walk through it and then you walk out the door. Like that's what you've done with this building.
Yes.
Because this building still just invokes nothing but.
Of course.
Total.
I think the most
fear.
Important thing that happened is it's a different elevator bank. I think that's
mm-hmm.
huge. Just to have a little, like just to be able to enter
yeah.
in a slightly different way.
Wow. Yeah, that's amazing. I can't even get even near this place without.
Even today, like
yeah.
it just, is it?
I still have nightmares. I'm looking over because one of your
yes.
producers,
Kevin Miller
is staring furiously at me. But I feel like Miller, you might have been in one of my nightmares. I still have nightmares where the music starts, where the show's starting, and I'm running down those stairs over near, wardrobe. That,
yeah.
And it's I'm always passing people who are very disappointed in me.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's always like Lauren or Tina or you, and everyone's just like nodding their head like, oh, no, like, we need you on, you're not there.
Mm-hmm.
You disappointed us.
Yeah. Mine is always updates about to start, and there are no jokes.
Now, see, this is where you and I are different, because I would be like, just Charm City, baby. Like,
that is, of course, the
I'd
difference
be like,
between us.
We are all set. More time to chat.
That is absolutely the fundamental difference between us. Mm-hmm. Without jokes, I'm a jellyfish.
Well, I had a psychic wound that happened in year four where Ken Among, who is an incredible producer of SNL and who's kind of like keeps the ship, you know, on the sea or on the waters, whatever that meant, whatever.
I think that was it.
Ship on the waters. he pulled me aside because I was showing up about 10 or 15 minutes late.
Yeah.
And he gave me a talking to.
Really?
Yeah, did I ever tell you that?
No.
And he was like, you're killing me with being late. And I was so ashamed. And I cleaned up my act.
Hey, Kevin Miller, you mentioned Kevin Miller's here. Do you remember what contest Kevin
Push
Miller...
Push-up contest? I was talking about it to Jordan on the way over here.
Explain the push-up contest.
Well, I was explaining to Jordan who we're going to be seeing today. I said, oh, Miller, I said, well, you know, the great thing about Miller is, you know, he was in a room with all these writers. And, you know, when to have that job, you have to have a certain temperament. You have to be smart and good at your job, but you have to also be like, shh, quiet. You can't be the person that's like jumping in every minute because everyone's like, this guy.
Yeah.
And Miller was just quiet, steadfast, good at his job, which is always the best thing, and probably, you know, funnier than 70% of the Yahoos that went through that writer's room.
Absolutely.
And J.B. Smoove, a writer who was known for his hyperbolic presentations.
Yes.
And a tall, skinny, fit gentleman who looked like he would be excellent at push-ups. And also, one of the reasons why we thought he would be good at push-ups is he said, I'm awesome at doing push-ups, and I can beat anybody here, right?
Yes.
And he started a push-up contest. You, by the way...
Wait, hold on. I think J.B. Smoove... I'm going to jump in real quick. J.B. Smoove said he could do push-ups. He did not start it. The amount the women... like shamed us in not shame, but it was
We were into it.
I thought back. I was like, oh, I bet this is like what it's like if to being a woman in show business was that moment, because there was like a really awesome.
Right, we were like, take off your shirts.
You're like, do it, and like nobody wanted to do it.
Nobody took
like,
their shirts
do
off.
Nobody took their shirts off, but you made everybody do a push-up. Contest.
You meaning you think it was me?
You,
that's
Atina.
So interesting because I remember it a little bit differently, but I think you're right. I think we fanned the flames.
What do you remember then?
Well, I just remember JB talking about it and there being a little bit of a masculine like
scrum there was that, too.
That happened. Yep. And then once that happened, and I mean, look, any masculinity from a bunch of actors is welcomed. Sorry, but like anybody that like can move a cabinet.
Yes, it's true because I think people talk about like male-dominated writers' rooms. That does not mean that it's masculinity-dominated.
No, everyone's talking about their colds and how
where their food is,
weak their wrists are, and how where their food is.
I ordered soup an hour ago. If my soup's cold, I'm going to send
They're
it
like,
back.
When do I have to get into makeup? That's what everyone's saying. So I think we got a little excited about that. And then, if I remember correctly, you did push-ups.
Yeah.
Ex-Marine Rob Riggle did push-ups. Uh-huh. Forte
did push-ups.
Sandberg?
Also, I should point out, I don't think Sandberg was there yet.
Yeah.
JB in the end was very bad at push-ups.
He was very bad.
It was like a form. It looked far more like dancing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like his whole... Like, if you can think about the push-up, it's very clearly like, that you just want the chest is the thing that hits the ground. Like, basically, like, JB's was like a wave. Like, his shin hit the ground, then his knee hit the ground, then his thigh hit the ground, then his body. And then it would, like, just go back up. It was, like, very parabolic. And it was really great.
Because
he was
great.
Nobody has ever talked about the difference between how good they were at push-ups and how bad they were at push-ups. But then you guys typed up the results.
Well, I don't remember that. We did.
But then it was pinned up on people's wall for a long time.
So you did, by the way, Seth, very well.
Thank you.
Did you come in second or third?
I believe I came in third, but later in the print-up, there were different divisions, and I finished the highest of the metrosexuals, which does date when this happened because that was a thing people... Remember
when
metrosexuals...
Metrosexual was a big word. And Kevin Miller, bringing it back very quietly, got out from behind his desk with no frankly, low... You know, like just a late entry.
Yep.
And crushed.
Crushed.
Did what, like 80 push-ups or something?
It was there was no close second.
Yeah,
yeah,
and just did it methodically, and then like went back to his desk to continue doing his job. Well.
Yeah, whereas like I think I had to go.
You were upset.
Fall asleep. I was mad too.
You were mad.
I did think I was gonna win. I didn't really think I was going to win.
I know.
I even bringing up now, I think back, I'm like, I think if it just, if we'd had, if we'd done it a week later, if I'd known, but I definitely.
Well, you could, you should start a push-up contest every week now that you have your own show and you have to win.
Yeah.
No one can beat you. And at the very end, if they're about to beat you, someone gives them a look and then they collapse.
Yeah. Like, I think, like, when Putin plays hockey, with he always has, like, 12
yeah,
goals.
Yeah, he always wins. Oh, that's such a funny thing. When someone let somebody win. I love that.
It was, again, that's like a million years ago, but that was a very fun time. Yeah. And that was that room, that writer's room, where the push-up contest happened, was a really nice social
yeah.
part of our lives.
It
really.
Was. It was. I just remember being in that room and watching so much life happen, so much yeah. news happen, mm-hmm. and digesting. I mean, it's one of the things I miss the most. That it must be awesome on your show, is to be able to come in. I mean, I have that a little yeah. bit with Paper Kite. Like, we come in and talk about the day, but you just need people to digest the news with.
Yeah. It is, to be able to walk into a writer's room, more often than not, by the way, disrupting their day and their mm-hmm. work when I come in.
Right.
But then I just want to sit down and talk
and
about
say,
stuff.
Like, can we, did you yeah. guys hear, I mean, yeah. am I wrong? Is this the right take?
Yeah.
You know, like,
and then sometimes even, like, did you watch?
Did you
like,
watch?
It's fun
yeah.
to have did you watch people. As yeah. you get older, you just have less collective did you watch.
Yeah. I also tend to know about 10 to 15% of the story.
Yeah.
So I like to spread false information as fast as I can. Did you guys hear about the ban? They're banning all of the things. And they're like, what parts? I'm like, all of the parts. Of the things.
So you like to come in hot
yeah.
with a little bit of information.
Yeah.
That's good. there's a scene where there's a snake in the movie.
Yes.
It's a live
Wine
snake.
Country, there's a snake.
And so you had a snake wrangler.
Yes. And I was saying, these snake wranglers were 100% an SNL character. It would have been probably like Fred or Forte playing one of them. Probably Forte. And we had two different guys. One guy wore snakeskin boots, like, ha-ha, like, yeah, I got you, man. And talked a big game and loved to explain all the different snakes. And then when the game time came, when we had to put the snake in, he had brought the wrong snake. He had brought a boy rattlesnake that we couldn't work with. It had to be a snake that looked scary, but that wasn't actually.
Right.
So we lost that snake bit for the day. We had to push it to another day. And then the second snake guy that we had, who, by the way, did capture like 25 snakes at the place we were at, was like, do you remember that? You remember the book The Stand? Do you remember the character
yeah, yeah.
Randall Flagg?
Yes.
He had a Randall Flagg, like,
gotcha.
He looked like a man who was, had been near a nuclear reactor or something, like
uh-huh.
all crispy and burned and like. But yeah.
I have a memory of you playing a snake handler.
Oh, like, Britney Spears.
Britney Spears. Was she the host? She must have been. Because I know the sketch was Britney Spears' snake.
But I don't think it ever made air.
But I feel like it was one of our first shows.
I think it was my first sketch.
Yeah.
And I played
Oh, yeah, because Reese Witherspoon was hosting, and maybe
yes,
she was
that
Britney
was
Spears.
It. It was know. It. And it was, I played a, how can I put this? Like a butch
yeah.
snake wrangler.
Mm-hmm.
Because Britney had just used the snake at her
yeah at the VMAs or
yeah.
something
and there should be a word for the feeling you have when you can tell the audience is like, and who is that?
Oh right,
they did not care nor know me, so they were like, and who is this person?
Yes,
they just
oh right, and also you were laugh. Not only just a new face, you were also playing a very cocky character.
That's right.
So it's like, oh, well, who's this stranger who's being very arrogant with me?
Also, and standing, getting in the way of me seeing Britney.
Yeah.
Like standing in my way.
And standing in my way. And also, if we're a little tight, it might be that it's 18 days after 9/11 when we did our first show. The audience was a little tight.
They
weren't
were
ready for snake wrangler.
No,
humor.
They didn't want to make fun of that yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, they wanted, they didn't know what they wanted.
Nobody knew what they wanted that night.
I know what they wanted. They wanted Will Ferrell in a patriotic speedo.
Yeah, and that was a week later.
Yeah, and he brought it back. He revived comedy. He used the paddles.
Do you I think about it all the time now because of how obviously current times have changed history, but the biggest laugh that night, Rudy Giuliani.
I know, right? And now he's turned into like a vampire guy.
Yeah,
he's
a daytime vampire.
He's technically
Yeah.
Dead.
Yes.
But he still lives on.
Still, yeah.
Yeah.
Very strange. Good good to remember that no legacy is complete. You can always change
your
own personal history. So you might think, oh, I did all this stuff.
Did Lauren write that joke that 9/11? I think he did, right?
He did. Yeah. You know, which means that he probably did.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a Lauren one.
He might have. Yeah, I know. Seth's looking at his notes right now.
I wrote down who wrote that joke. I did not know, and it made me so happy when I was watching the Oscars this year and you and Maya and Tina walked out.
Yeah.
It was so exciting.
It was really cool. You know, but those, you know, because of doing so many shows, those shows are the same. But for some reason, the Oscars acts like that one is different.
Right.
But it's not. It's not.
It's not.
I mean,
I think that the room and the audience might be. I mean, if expectations are different, then
that. But I imagine that room is just like the Emmys in terms of like not, you know, those rooms with the seating that's not table seating and people can't drink and stuff. I bet it's the same kind of airless vibe.
The
but
great thing about it, though, which was what they should do forever, is because nobody knew who was coming out.
Mm-hmm.
It was the joy of you guys coming out. Whereas if you had announced 2 months ago, one, you would have had to do so much press.
Yeah.
And nothing's worse than talking about how you're going to host an award.
Oh, my God.
Especially when you have no idea and your best joke is going to be written 2 days before.
Yeah.
So I thought that was nice that you guys got to
just that was really fun.
Delight people.
Yeah, I think some people really, like, rehearse for months and months and months for those awards.
Yeah.
But I don't think that there should be any more award shows. And I've said this, and I actually tried to say this on award shows, but for some reason they're not keen on it. But I think that it's bananas. Like, there's too many award shows.
Yep.
I think they should either, like, shrink it down into something, like, fun. Like, they take whatever money they spend, $5 million, and give it to charity, and then do some online thing or have, like, everybody post videos after they've won or something like that. Or they should just, like, pick the most famous person. Like, everybody goes to Julia Roberts' house, and we get to see her house.
Oh.
And then, the winners get to see her bedroom.
It's just like, it's like sort of a slow walk through the house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like those Nixon, like those 50s, like when Jackie Kennedy would show you around.
And she'd be like, here's this table. Mm-hmm. We brought this table.
Yeah.
It's from here.
But yeah, I don't think we should do any more award shows. I think they're weird. And I don't know. But people don't agree with me on that.
I saw, this is a total side story, about Jackie Kennedy.
Ooh.
Which is, and it's, Arnold Schwarzenegger was on the show.
Ooh.
And that movie, Natalie Portman movie, had just come out.
Ooh.
And I said, have you seen the movie? Did she talk like that? And he was like, oh, she talked just like that. And then he did an impression of Jackie Kennedy. And it's very hard to do, but it was like, oh, that was like, Arnold doing Jackie. It was like for the greatest impression I've ever seen in my life. Because in his head, he's doing her.
Mm.
But in my head, you can't not hear Arnold Schwarzenegger.
You know that part in Central Park, it's called like the Jackie Onassis Reservoir?
Yeah.
That's pretty dope. Like to have part of Central Park named after you.
You're
that's
right.
The goal.
Mm-hmm.
Like Seth Meyers handball court.
Yeah. Also, because a street, you feel like it's protected lands. Because if you have a street named after you, neighborhood could go to hell.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, people are like, oh, you don't want to stay off Seth Meyers after 11.
Yeah.
You know, you don't. Oh, I guess. Maybe happened in the park.
Yeah, we found some body parts.
So what part of New York City? Any part of New York City could be named after Amy Poehler.
Oh, thank you for asking.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say where the old Pizzeria Uno used to be.
Okay.
On 6th Avenue and like Waverly. Like where that Waverly Diner.
Oh, yeah.
I like that little area stretch because I live around there and like I just, but also it used to be like all those places are gone now. It's kind of empty. Everything's empty and closed. And so I'm going to choose like right near the subway stop there in 11th.
Yeah, that Waverly Diner still has.
It's still open, right?
It's still open and it still has. I feel like I walk by it all the time, but like the neon still says things that you want to see, like pizza and coffee, like roast beef, like things that it's funny to think of. It was still at a time where someone said, I'd like call the neon sign guy and get a coffee one.
Yeah.
Get turkey.
Get a coffee.
Like, just let we as bright as we can tell people what we have in here.
I remember Don Pardo would say that he would drive into, like, 50 years ago, drive in here to do the voiceover, and he would park right in front of 30 Rock on the street, and he would get a coffee, black coffee, and a hamburger sandwich.
Yep.
And he'd bring, like, $5 with him.
Yeah, Horatio's bit would be that Pardo, because Pardo was long-winded.
Yes.
And he was one of those people that when you first meet him, you can't believe you're talking to Don Pardo, because it's this iconic announcer, this voice you've known your whole life.
Yeah.
And he went, but I remember Horatio would say, like, I would bring $2 and I'd buy a coffee for 5 cents. Now I've got $1.95, Horatio. Now my hamburger's 22 cents, $1.73. And it was just like about literally taking his whole day to tell you how much money he spent. How he spent his $2.
I did Fallon the other night, and I said to Jimmy, you should do a Sandler song about Horatio, but Horatio should come on and be like, what are you doing? I'm not dead. He should do like a Farley-type song about how much he loves Horatio. Horatio should be like, I'm doing great.
It's Billy Joel's birthday when we're talking right now.
Oh,
and so I knew this because
I could feel it.
We just had our monologue joke read, and there was a lot of that's like one of the setups. And so I was telling these younger writers who haven't seen it, maybe you were in the Billy Joel sketch with Lindsay Lohan.
Oh, whoa.
Horatio's Billy Joel. It was right after, this is a long time ago, and Billy is straight and narrow now, but he got a DUI on Long Island.
He did. And so the sketch was Horatio driving.
Yeah.
And things hitting his car.
So, yeah, like, because the car obviously is stationary in the sketch. And so it was just crew guys, like, throwing garbage cans and mailboxes.
Yeah, that would be, like, a great behind-the-scenes sketch because it would just be guys standing next to a car throwing props
at it. But something gets stuck. I just remember something gets stuck and he has to pretend to climb out the car. And you are laughing so hard. And it's also that great thing that we were talking about, SNL sketches, when you're doing an impression of a singer, they tend to, which I don't think they do in real life, they tend to scream their lyrics a lot. So it was a lot of like Horatio being like, I ought to know by now.
Yeah, he was singing his lyrics.
Yeah.
Didn't Billy Joel and Elton John go on tour together?
Yeah.
And Horatio played both of them.
He did play both of them.
He should have gone on tour with them. God, I forgot about that.
This movie is based on a real trip you guys took.
Yeah. We went to Santa Rosa, actually, which suffered a lot of destruction a few years later with all the fires. So our thoughts are with you, Santa Rosa. But, we went for Dratch's 50th. And Rachel Dratch is a triple Pisces, as I'm sure she would want me to tell you. And so she literally never knows, like, even what time her flight is. So she's like, can you help me plan my birthday? And I was like, I would love to, because or else we'll be literally sitting on a sleeping bag on a, you know, in the back of a pickup truck somewhere. So we planned it together, and she had this great friend who came and cooked paella for us, and it was delicious. And so we used that to create a character that exists in the movie that is not based off of the real guy.
Jason Schwartzman is so good.
He's the loveliest guy.
He is the loveliest guy. And I saw him last night and commended him because he is the kind of the outsider in that you guys have all known each other forever.
Mm-hmm.
And he had to come in.
Yeah.
And he just comported himself so well.
He's such a great actor. He's super prepared. So prepared that, and he really method. And we had really great conversations, and actually it was a really nice gift that he gave me, because directorially he would say, like, do you think I over-prepare? And I would say, I do indeed. Yes, I do. And he would say, because his method was so different. Like, he came from the school of really, 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 like, he, you know, it wasn't working for him unless there's a little bit of, like, misery involved. So a lot of walking around and talking and thinking, right? And he would deliver, and I'd be like, this is so great. He had knew so much information, and I knew in the film that we were never going to let this guy say any of it. So he's, you know, he plays our kind of our tour guide. And Jason had studied all this stuff about the area and about the paella that he's making, and I kept going, I love that you know it. I'm telling you right now, it's not going to make the movie, but... And he kept going, do you think I were prepared? I said, oh, yeah, definitely. But he was a delight.
I imagine knowing him so much from those, you know, Wes Anderson movies, being one of those players where it's all about, it must just be hyper-precise and no time to do anything. So he must have seen this as a nice opportunity to be a little...
You would think, but I think he's got bad... I'm going to say it. I think he's got some, like, bad habits where he thinks that for it to mean something, it has to be, like, Method City.
Yeah.
And you know, we've worked with people like that where it's, like, it's not good unless it's torture.
Well, that's the SNL. I remember just an SNL host. And I have a lot. I don't know if this happened for you. When I went back and hosted, I had a real appreciation for, like, oh, it's harder to do this than I thought.
Yeah.
With that said, when you were dealing with method actors who would say something like, but why do I say this? And you just want to say, because it's 4 minutes long and you have to leave the room. I need you out of the room.
Yeah, so that we can bring the guy with the who's holding the chicken in the room. And
you're in his light.
Yeah, you got to get out of there. I know.
Why?
But Jason is, I will say, like, so funny and kind and super game, like, which is awesome. I love him.
Yeah.
He's a delight.
It was really... The level of difficulty of just sort of holding your own, and he went so far above that and just being excellent.
He did drive us around all day long. You can imagine us cackling in the back.
So he was really driving?
He was really driving.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we were in a van, and it was just, we were just, I mean, the lack of professionalism, I'm sure he heard on those days.
Well, you had Cherry Jones in the movie, who's just a legend.
She's my Sam Shepard.
Yeah.
She's so cool. A tremendous actress, and you know, talk about pro. Like, she came to visit set before she and it was really cool. She said, like, oh, I just like to come to set a day or two before I actually work, so I meet people as myself, so it won't be the first time meeting them. And I thought, well, that's really smart.
Yeah,
she's good at her job.
Yeah,
and she's such a pro. And she had so much to memorize, and we literally couldn't remember one line. She had like 8 pages of dialogue, and she'd be like, she'd say these long things. She plays a tarot card reader, and she'd say these long
and also like long, like tarot language.
Yes, a lot of like
nothing she's said in her real life.
Exactly, Wheel of Fortune and rocks and chariot card and the reverse whatever. And then we'd be sitting there, and someone would go, "Oh, that's me." what?
Congratulations on Russian Doll.
Thank you.
What a wonderful show.
Isn't it great?
It really is.
I think so too. Natasha's a giant.
Natasha's a giant, and it is that thing. And I feel like you did it with Wine Country as well, where there's all these women that I've known for a long time, and then you see them be this best version of themselves on screen. Mm. And I thought that was, there's obviously a lot of reasons to love Russian Doll, but I was like, oh, this is Natasha. Like, you guys just figured out a way to get the best Natasha on screen.
Yeah, she'll tell you that she's so influenced by all those, you know, 70s actors like Pacino and De Niro.
Yeah.
And she kind of, but she is like that. She really does move around the world like that. She's like a singular creature and has lived a million lives.
Yeah.
And is a really, what I love so much about her is, she's one of the least judgmental people I know. Like, she really does not. She's curious about so many things, and she kind of is like a time traveler. I think she's born in a different era.
I would never have thought, but just to have a little bit of a sci-fi element in a show that's sort of driven by Natasha made total sense.
I know. I hope we're hoping to do season two. I think it looks likely, and I'm glad you like that, because that. We're talking about where to go in season two, and because it was really felt like a complete film in many ways, the whole series. But yeah, I do. I like just a tiny bit of sci-fi, deep thinking.
It just kind of explains.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah.
And then also in shows, that also can drive me crazy. I'm like, okay, all right. Like, are you Game of Thrones? This is not sci-fi necessarily.
Yes.
It's fantasy.
Are you
fully
watching?
Caught up?
And how you feeling?
I mean. My joke was, like, it would be funny if at the very end, you know, Daenerys goes to sit on the throne and John's like, sweetheart. He was like, baby. And everyone was like, no. And she was like, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. What was I thinking? But I do like the theory that she's going to start going crazy.
Yeah.
Did you see that theory?
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. Although it seems like, again, it all just seems a little rushed. Like,
really? I feel like it's so slow.
I know, but like this idea that she's all of a sudden, I feel like people are going, you know, she might be a little crazy. I feel like that, like, we haven't seen it as much.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that will be interesting. Like, oh, the woman who's in charge has to be crazy. Great. Oh, but when they were fighting the zombies, I was like, whatever.
Yeah.
I don't care. They're already dead. What's the rules? The rules are no rules. They walk through fire. They live. They never die. Like, but then they die.
I also just don't think they use the dragons well.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, well.
Rest in peace.
Yeah, right. But is that real dragon really dead?
The one in the water?
Yeah, dude. Think about it. Because they said, I mean, it did get shot through the neck and stuff and go in the water and die. But remember they said, we got one of the dragons and one of the people says, I'm like, did you see it fall or something? I think that dragon's going to come out of the water and be, I don't know.
Because there's no rules. So you'd be like, how did you breathe?
And zombie
dragon's
dragon.
Like, I could always breathe.
I could always breathe. Dragons breathe. And we go, well, I guess they, yeah.
Yeah. New rule. It's like Bill Maher. They go, new rule, I can breathe underwater.
My favorite character, though, I did love Theon. I was sad. Yeah. No spoilers, sorry. But by the way, like at this point.
Yeah,
right? But
nobody should be behind.
I'm sad when he died.
Yeah, he got a nice send-off.
If you could be any character, like from an actor's perspective, who would you want to play?
That's a good question.
And remember, Bran gets to sit down all the time. I'm just saying.
I mean, Bran, as my limitations of an actor, I think I'd be the best Bran. It's like
I mean, he gets to be outside in, like, beautiful Irish air in under blankets.
Yeah, so he can, like, he can go nuts at craft services. You know what I mean? Like, he's, like,
you know, some of those guys. Yeah.
Like, I feel like if Kit Harington puts on half a pound, like, the thing doesn't fit.
Yeah, and people are going to be upset.
Yeah. I mean, I think the most like, Jaime Lannister has been the most arc.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
He's the Sawyer. For you Lost fans.
And I think you've always said I was kind of the Sawyer of our era.
I did. I always called you the Sawyer of the push-up contest.
Of the push-up contest. You were kind of into Sawyer.
Kind of. Yeah, the guy that was chained up that everybody got to have sex with. Yeah, I was into him.
But you would, I mean, I feel like if you were with Sawyer, you would eventually feel like intellectually underserved, right?
I mean, sure. I feel like I'd find a book that would help me out. I feel like I'd work it out.
Oh, so you just wouldn't ask?
I would.
You wouldn't
ask
Sawyer for that.
You can't ask your partner to be everything for you. You have to. So if I needed intellectual stimulation, I'd go talk to, you know, whatever, the professor or whatever the guy was on that show. I don't remember. I only remember Sawyer.
I think you should learn his name if you're going to.
I remember. Remember Matthew Fox came and hosted? Yeah. He was very nice. And all those people were real outdoor people.
Yeah,
they like to work out.
Yeah,
and
well, that's it.
You're right. Maybe I would get tired of Sawyer.
Yeah,
if Sawyer was like, oh, hey, I saw this, you know, I'll talk about this. I'd be like, so just go back to get tied back up to the tree.
And Sawyer'd be like, you want this 8 mile hike to waterfall?
Yeah, I'd be like, all right. You're like, just tell me when you're back in the tied against the tree, okay?
I'm gonna read my book.
I want to read my
Sawyer. You, honey, Sawyer, honey.
I'm listening
go for
to
your
Nichols
hike.
And May podcast, Sawyer.
And then you
I
come
can't.
Back.
Like he'd be like, look at these leaves I found. I'm like, okay, you're so great. Wow,
these are great leaves, Sawyer. I'm gonna go put them in my leaf book. Okay, honey.
I'd be like, okay, honey, just move those things I asked you to move.
All right. I love you. Congrats on the movie.
I love you too. I'm excited. Congrats on your podcast, guys.
Thank you.
A lot of people don't know this room is filled with like 50 people.
Yeah.
They're all dressed in tuxedos.
They've been shaking their head. No, they sort of market text it in real time. So what you hear, I don't know how long, whatever you listen to, just know we talked for 4 hours.
How many podcasts have you done so far?
I don't know. We're probably, are we at 100?
Whoa.
Yeah.
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 That's awesome. Yeah. I love podcasts now. It's all I listen to. Except for this, which I haven't listened to this one yet, but I will. Now I will.
Let's go. Let's go see if Schumer's here and go talk about people in his office.
Okay, bye.
Late Night with Seth Meyers airs weeknights on NBC at 12:35, 11:35 Central. Original music on the Late Night podcast is by the HE Band. Don't forget to follow the handle Late Night Seth on social media and tell your friends to subscribe to the Late Night podcast wherever they get their podcasts.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.